reasons yet this morning. It seems that today will be expansion of specific facilities, early childhood development, inclusive education, and the research. And with that, we will be watching on the agenda. I would like to welcome you to this meeting this morning. Are there any apologies, Lorraine?
Thank you, Chief. If you have received today only one apology, that is from Honorable Jacobo. And I do believe from our Honorable Mashishi and Honorable Kuzanenda, we still do not well.
Any apologies on the department?
Honorable Chairperson, we have an apology from the Director of the House of Support to Brian, who is taken ill and is unable to travel, and sent an apology, the very good apology of the Foundation. We also have our Director for DCP, someone was hospitalized as well, but we will also be with us for today. The President is myself, I don't think we have any doctor.
Thanks a lot for that. And we do have the apology. With what briefing are we start? The inclusive education. Let us thank you, Uncle Gina.
Chairperson, before we even start the presentation, I think it's really important for us as a committee to raise this and to say, not for the first time we raised this department, and I clearly need to raise today too. Whenever the department has become a major condition to us, we have requested many times before to say, can we get the presentation before so that when they come here, even us as members, we are aware of what they are coming up with, we've got a chance to go through the document. For them to come now with the document, for the members to encounter the document now and expect them to interact with the document in a profitable manner, I think it's a little bit unfair. So really, I don't know whether the department is taking the committee for granted or what is happening, but before we even engage on the discussion for today, I would like the department to say something on this, because I really, we can't take time to this. We think the relationship that we thought we had has been just wrong. I believe the way it is happening, they don't take it the way we want to. They don't show the respect that we always show them to them. So really, I would be happy if ever they can talk to them. What makes them to think that it's not related to them, so that you can get them today, not the relationship to go to the future.
I'd like to report him to answer to that. Is there anyone else that would like to speak on this topic? Uncle Smart?
Thank you, Chair. Well, Chairperson, as much as I would like to agree with regard to that, I also need, in all fairness, to mention that I've received this via the email, the document in the presentation. So it was with the secretary, Mr. Brown, whether the chief work in this committee and not, that's another matter. I don't know.
I'll ask Mr. Brown first to speak, and then I will take part in the speaker.
Thank you, Chair. Just to put on record that the EDC in the document around I need to say that my email, there's everything to be trying to get to it, because not all members have actually, you know, but getting the heart of this committee,
I'd like the department to speak to this because I cannot like receiving documents in the morning because the only person that has got through the documents the day before. Mr. Matura, what?
Chairperson, thank you very much.
let me apologize for any participation or effort you are in that service. But as far as we are aware, there are presentations on ECT and the CAT. Were actually submitted already on Friday. There were emails already on Friday. The presentation on digital education was delivered yesterday, together with the entire tech that is on Friday. And we just want to make sure that we apologize for the presentation and that we have come to the policy.
Clearly the department is not at fault. I don't have anything to apologize for. The secretary to the committee did his job as well.
I should think we need to promote ourselves here on this issue of communication. We want to get the documentation in advance so that we can read them. That's a clear statement. Not on Friday. Can't bring a document on Friday yet. Expect us to read on Tuesday, must be in a meeting. No. We know that by the following week, maybe Tuesday, the presentation of a certain section in the department. If we must get the document before Friday, I'll get the document on Tuesday. I think we cannot debate it, but this is a clear statement, not just the document before we can speak to the meeting. Thank you.
Gracias. Donald James, committee member.
Donald Flaus, member of the committee.
The liaison officer, Mr. Engineer Chair. Thank you.
Good morning, I'm Pam Binney from PMG.
Of the mainstream by default.
The curriculum and education system has generally failed to respond to the diverse needs of the Mera population, resulting in massive number of dropouts, push-outs, and fail-offs. So these are the overarching problems and challenges, as actually acknowledged by White Paper 6. Action plan to 2014 towards the realization of school in 2025, a response to the above challenges. Action plan to 2014 proposes the following priorities as a response to the identified challenges. One, to increase the number of full service schools or inclusive schools to at least one for every district, while ensuring their access to specialized or to specialist services. Increase the percentage of schools in which at least one teacher has received specialized training in the identification and provision of support for special needs. Thirdly, progressively strengthening the capacity of district offices to provide support to schools in the identification of special needs and provision of appropriate support. Fourthly, to provide appropriate and accessible textbooks, workbooks, and other LCSM on learning and teaching support material for visually impaired learners in 22 schools for the blind. Update on curriculum and assessment. In other words, what has been the development in the department? The following are developments alongside CAP, that is the Curriculum and Assessment Policy Statement, to ensure appropriate response to special needs through the CAP. Policy Statement for accommodating diversity through curriculum delivery and assessment were developed and approved for incorporation into the CAP. Accommodation of diversity through the curriculum was included in the CAP orientation program for provincial and district officials. 200 provincial, district, and school management team officials from 66 schools were trained in specialized areas of visual and hearing impairment in March 2011. 66 schools, that is 22 schools for the blind and 44 schools for the deaf. Workbook 1 for grades 1 to 6 have been adapted for Braille, and grades 10 to 12 textbooks ordered for the 22 schools for the blind. What are the next immediate steps through to 2014? Develop training programs on accommodation of diversity through tests for teachers and school management teams progressively through to 2014. Actually, this has started with foundation phase and grade 10, because they have to implement the curriculum, the research curriculum in 2012. Ensure access to workbooks and textbooks for learners in schools for the blind in line with the phased implementation of CAP to 2014. Develop training programs on specialized skills for 700 and 1,000 teachers of visually and hearing impaired learners respectively, starting from 2011 through to 2014. On the South African Sign Language curriculum, grades R to 12. The minister appointed a curriculum management team in 2010 to develop the South African Sign Language curriculum for grades R to 12. The CMT developed a framework for the South African Sign Language sign language curriculum in October 2010. The CMT developed terms of reference for the appointment of the South African Sign Language curriculum writer. Six writers of the curriculum were appointed in 2011. Some of the terms of reference for the writer, the key one, are to complete the writing of the South African Sign Language curriculum within a year after commencement, to report regularly to the CMT on progress made, to observe patency for the developed curriculum. The planned implementation of the curriculum is with effect from 2013. On full-service schools, the progressive conversion of ordinary schools to full-service schools is one of the key strategies for implementing the inclusive education policy. To date, 94 full-service schools have been established in 7 provinces, 2 in the Eastern Cape, 2 in the Free State, 9 in Gauteng, 14 in KZN, 2 in Limpopo, 1 in Mpumalanga, none in the Northern Cape, 71 in the Northwest, and 2 in the Western Cape. What are the next steps? Building capacity at district level, using guidelines for full service schools, for further conversion of ordinary schools to full service schools to at least one school per district by 2014, as it was mentioned earlier. Coordinate the procurement of assistive devices where required by provinces. Ensure that established school-based support teams, which we sometimes refer to as institutional-level support teams, are functional in existing full-service schools, and that they are able to provide support to learners requiring that. Identification of special needs and provision of support. The system introduced the screening, identification, assessment, and support, known as the CEOS, strategy for identification of barriers to learning and provision of appropriate support. 5,000 district and school-based officials were trained on the job screening, identification, assessment, and support strategy by provinces from 2008. Feedback reports on the implementation of the CEOS suggested that there is need for streamlining, integration and standardization of the CEOS strategy. Because at its current format, there are challenges in terms of implementation. So we have accepted the responsibility as a department and we are currently working on that. Next step, set up an intersectoral health team to refine and finalize the CEOS for Gauteng by March 2012. Why an intersectoral task team is because there is this issue about integration so that it should have components of, you know, some screening procedures and guidelines from other departments as well, because its implementation relies on the involvement of other departments, not only the education department. For instance, Department of Health, Department of Social Development, just to make an example. Develop training programs for use by teacher development to train on the identification of special needs from 2012. Monitor the implementation of the CEOS strategy from 2013. Special schools, particularly their conversion to resource centers, provide access to specialist services and contribute to the strengthening of district capacity to support special needs. To date, 200 officials, including school management teams, were trained in visual and hearing impairment to support their respective 66 special schools. What are the next steps? To train the 700 teachers for visually impaired learners and 1,000 for hearing impaired in specialist skills from 2011 through to 2013. Finalize the transfer of reform schools and schools of industry to Department of Social Development by 1st April 2012. Coordinate the progressive conversion of special schools to resource centers for their additional role. Coordinate procurement of accessible LTSM, learning and teaching support materials, and assistive devices. Thank you.
The proverb probably for some of us to do proper oversight, we may even need to know these schools where they are actually located, or their name. Because to say there's schools in Poko, there's whatever number in another province and so on, when we start, don't know. But we had honorable Kotara Wakin already, they're in the district everywhere. But they are talking officially of the 94. Do they want to go and understand how they actually deal with the situation? And in those, you are not coming forth to think what may be the challenge. Are they challenges in implementing this policy? Or you think it's fine, there are no real challenges, but maybe in this person or anything like that. So just share with us what may be the difficulties experienced so far.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, I was listening to the presentation, but while that happened, I was looking at the annual plan of the department. And to my surprise, I find very, very little in the annual plan, whilst we have a brilliant presentation there. So, Chairperson, somebody is taking this committee for a ride. And it cannot happen. It cannot continue to happen. If your annual plans don't speak to your presentation, then I think we didn't need the presentation of the plan. So, Chairperson, on page 23, 22, in the annual plan, you will see what I'm talking about. And the Honorable Kosana has indicated when he made his comments that it looks like we are starting with this Muslim education, the way the things are happening. So, Chairperson, the department must explain itself. Why is the annual plan not speaking to the presentation? Then, Chairperson, to come back to schools. While I appreciate the number of food service schools as maybe one of the highlights in the presentation, I want to go back to the school itself, the schools in the district. And my question is with regard to the remedial classes at school. There is a problem with literacy and numeracy, we know that. But then there is no solution for that. And we know from the previous education system, there were remedial classes at school to help learners with reading and writing. Does this department consider bringing back remedial classes at school? Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chair. My question is to do with the CAPS and the role of dealing with challenged kids, as you mentioned in this report. So it comes to CAPS. So, I mean, the problem with CAPS is that that the period of implementation is just so short that the publishers have difficulty with getting quality textbooks done in time, and the teacher training program that should accompany them, accompany the CAP program, is not at all clear. So my question was to do with what kind of teacher training programs are in place, where, what are the dates for the training, for getting them up to speed in terms of the requirement of the curriculum assessment, policy assessment. If you could give us the dates for the teacher training programs that will be introduced and at which institution.
Thank you, Chair. I think some of the questions have already been posed. I would definitely be happy if I could also be clear about this push out. I don't know who this push out are, so that it's clear to me to see the difference between drop out and push out, who pushes this one out and so on. But I think on the second page we speak of I think it's bullet number 3. So that represents the capacity of district offices to provide support to schools in the identification of special needs and provision of appropriate support. This statement is very, very important. But now, if you remember, I think we once had a discussion here about training of psychologists. I think the answer here, when we questioned the department about the availability of psychologists in the class of education, was that they used psychologists from the Department of Health and Social Development. And we suggested that it's okay, but I think even the Department of Health and Social Development do not have enough psychologists, and many of them are not really trained for education. Some they are clinical psychologists, social workers, and so on and so on. Now, do you plan to train educational or school psychologists in the department? Because if you speak of strengthening the capacity of district offices, in my mind, I'm thinking of such people in the district who definitely will assist the teachers. Otherwise, if what you mean here is maybe the training of a subject advisor to do this massive task, I think we are not going in the right direction. Thank you.
Thank you. I'm happy returning to the full service school for a moment. Obviously, the difference between like Northwest and Mobile Asylum and Gauteng and Western Cape, on the other hand, looks rather varying. Are there reasons why a province like Northwest would have 71 schools? What was the background to this be? And what are the challenges? And then where there are these full service schools, what is the success? Is it looking promising? Is it what we're expecting? Is it really seeing something?
Thank you, Chairperson. The program statement identifies barriers to learning in 2001. 10 years later, in 2011, where are we? My next question is, on curriculum and assessment, the next step, say, develop training programs and specialize the skills for 701,000 teachers of visual learners, hearing prepared learners. What informs these people? How many do we currently have? Thank you.
In my view, I will start with the number of schools for blind. The 22 records in first grade, we only have 22 schools for blind in the country. And we feel that the textbooks will be prepared for these 22 schools. It is because it's only 22 schools that they have. And the reason why I'm asking that is because we are also always complaining and saying when it comes to the children's class, the children, the challenges that children are there. In the school for blind. We always get 0% pass and whatever. Now it's the day what informs the 22 is because it's a whole number of the schools that you have in the country so that you can access to move them at least that you get a certain percentage, particularly matric for them to pass the matric. And again, when you look at the presentation, yes, we are talking of inclusive education, but my concern is mostly I think we concentrate more on visual and hearing and internet. Whereas when we talk of this, I think there is a diversity of possibilities that we can talk about, which I don't think is that way. As to say what we say about other kinds of disabilities, because really the concern is on those two that I'm talking about here. And also when we look at the Department of Education, we see we are talking of reverting the infrastructure and whatever in school. But if ever I can hear from the director of inclusive education as to say what is it that they are doing to make sure that when you talk of this inclusive education, not only talking of what are these schools? These schools are schools because we believe that in each and every school, the mainstream school, but people with disability must be kept at home. So, what are the plans that we have? Yes, I see you are talking about the school service school, but what about other schools, mainstream schools, where we believe and we want these people with disabilities to be catered for? Are we talking of changing some of these schools? And I do think even that we must talk of some. Are we talking of making sure that each and every school accommodates these learners that are having disabilities and whatever? And lastly, Chair, coming around here from the Western Cape, there is a group of people that have come to us talking about the challenges that they have in these special schools. Most of them, some are in Buletu, in the townships around, that's to say, really, they don't get the necessary attention that they need to get from this particular education and the assistance that they are waiting for from this particular education. Firstly, the parents are complaining as to say, even the educators that are there, yes, I see they are being catered for, yes, they are being trained. But one of the outcries that the children is to say, even the educators, maybe they don't have means and ways to communicate well with the learners that are there. And they feel that they, as parents, they end up, it's as if they are the ones that are learning, because the educators will still provide notes to them and to say, can the learner do this and this and this? Because the teacher is not in the position to impact the knowledge to the children. So it's still a challenge there, right? I say, really, I think we need to look at this inclusive education besides those who cannot see and those who cannot hear. We do have people who have been on the wheelchairs that cannot access school. We have those who are slow learners that need the reader glasses of which one of those minds have talked about. Because that is one of the questions I wanted to say. What is it that we do with those who can be educated, but they take long to do this? Are we catering them in this training that you are doing? Because when you talk of inclusive education, I think we are incorporating all those kinds of people also. The diversity of all sorts of people that you are talking about. Thank you.
Thanks a lot. Quite a number of questions that you asked, and I'd like Dr. Sujat to answer to you. And some of these questions are interrelated, so thank you.
Chairperson, I will ask you the doctor to answer. I will leave the whole city without him. I will try to deal with, and you are correct, Chairperson, that many of these questions are interrelated. And let me start with the question that has come out of the presentation in relation to what has been referred to in slide number one. The problem statement in slide number one articulates what white paper six on inclusive education has already observed already in 2001. That we have had as a country and as a system notable challenges, and in relation to that, I think the department will not come and indicate that it has not enough. One of the key areas that we have we know that as a system we have not done efficiently on is this whole question of inclusive education. And I think it's a letter that must be put to the table without having to hide it. Because the minute we can hide it, it is suggest that since white paper on inclusive education was drafted, there have been inconsistent mechanism of implementation, and hence the question that has been asked. Honorable Mali and Honorable Makubele were asking about the questions in relation to the problem statement. But what I think still holds in relation to what white paper has already seen at that stage was this whole question of, because there was little attention given to specific barriers that learners would have, there was little attention given. Hence, it was noted that there were instances where learners would drop out of the system, and as a result, would not be able to receive the necessary attention. Similarly, when one refers to the whole question of push-out, in instances where schools may not have had an opportunity to be able to deal with such challenges, the general tendency was that we do not have the support provide these learners, and as a consequence, what happens, because the parents
feel helpless, the schools do not know how to support them, and as a result, we get a situation where Lena came up. I think for putting it in the white paper, it was an acknowledgement of a problem that is there. And I think for us to also bring it here, it's still an acknowledgement of saying this is a matter that we would continuously have to be vigorous about in respect of addressing. But just on a broader note, I would want to say to the Honourable House and members that having noted these challenges, and maybe we should also be interrogating this in this education chapter or presentation in line with the development in respect of the action plan or the sector plan, which we now call Action 2024. Because it is in the context of the Action Plan 2014 that the Minister of Education and MEC have said, how do we turn around the education system to ensure that we can respond to the challenges that we have? So if we take a presentation on inclusive education as in isolation from the Action Plan, it might seem as if all of these things are not interrelated. It brings me to the question that Honorable Smiles asked, why do I not see in the annual performance plan inclusive education? You cannot see it in isolation. Because every other element, Honorable Chairperson, if you were to look in terms of increasing access to high quality LTSM, that high quality LTSM does not only refer to your mainstream school, but it also refers to schools, your special schools and otherwise. That is why in the presentation has also been mentioned in specific terms of how beyond having developed workbooks for ordinary sighted children, that we have had to make sure that these workbooks are also adapted for other learners. And I think it is in that context that the management of this plan is such that you don't box them, because it is through the boxing that we have always seen that there has always been that it is only that aspect that they have done. And not. So this plan seeks to do a metric management, and it's a metric management that seeks to respond to all of this. When we refer to the strengthening, for example, in the annual performance plan, there is an objective that speaks to the strengthening of this of capacity of the district. When you refer to this, what we would want you to see in terms of a plan that comes out in strengthening, it is we need to have covered all of the different elements that respond to the challenges that we have. So it is in that context the chairperson that I wanted to respond to these two broad issues. The first element that I'm wanting to respond to, which is partly raised by Honorable Kanyako, is that which talks to the support of the system in respect of identification and then psychosocial support. I think the question that Honorable Kanyako raises is a very important one. And we have noted that at the moment the pressure, not only in the Department of the Education System, but also in the health sector, in respect of the availability of health professionals that have to deal with it. I can indicate here that the whole question of psychosocial support is a matter that is receiving attention. And in fact, as part of, and that is why in our view that predicating everything in the context of the action plan, as well as the delivery agreement that the Minister of Basic Education has signed with other role players in the context of the support of basic education lies, it is in our view, that's where lies the answer. For example, in the context of the delivery agreement that the department, that the Minister of Basic Education has signed, it is how we will also leverage on the support that we will receive from other sister departments and government departments to provide for these services. One of the key elements of the delivery agreement is that there has to be a relationship and cooperation. And it is not just cooperation on paper, but it is cooperation that must be demonstrable in frame, it must be a cooperation that is demonstrable in activities that are presented, because such activities must be joined. And it is in that context that this element of psychosocial support is also being looked at. By the way, I may want to give this indication as well. We also, in last week, had to go to, as part of the monitoring of provinces of education, we were also part of a team that went to the Eastern Cape, as an example. And one of the key things that we had noted in respect of the extent to which inclusion may be coming back from other support that are provided for by education
that when one went to a region, one of the regions in the province, it was indicated that as a result, for example, of the nutrition program that has now been provided for by the department and government, the level of learner absenteeism has gone down significantly. In other words, learners want to come to school because they know that when they are at school, they report for attendance that they'll be able to get better. And that is, that's the kind of feedback that we're getting from the provinces. This is not extending the problems that may still arise, but I think that's an indication of the extent to which some of the interventions would be playing a role in this particular regard. So in a broader sense, our view is that this presentation should be also looked at in terms of, or in the context of an action plan that affects a plan. And this action plan is not only a Department of Basic Education plan that is in Victoria, but it affects a plan that incorporates everything that has to happen in all of the 9 different provinces in respect of how we would proceed with this particular area of our work. Chair, there are there was mention of full service schools, vis-a-vis special schools. And I think it's important that we also clarify this particular matter in our view. That indeed, and I think it was Honorable Susana who also mentioned that many of our schools must be able to accommodate learners in this regard. But perhaps what one would want to indicate here is this whole question that action plan has deliberately made mention of saying we must, as a system, ensure that we increase the number of full service schools. And perhaps in the definition of what you would term as a full service school, that would lie the answer to many of these challenges. And a full service school, in our interpretation, is a school that will ensure that it will accommodate a diversity of learners, or learners that may bring diversity both in terms of ability or disability, in whatever case that one may have to look at. And because we know that many different learners present disabilities or abilities in different ways, a full service school, the reason why we want to expand on the full service school is to ensure that we are able, at every other school that will be converted into a full service school, that learners will be able to receive adequate attention. This is notwithstanding the fact that this could have been done a little earlier and a little quicker. Chair, and I think the question that was asked could also relate to the policies that we have in the system. For example, there is a policy on promotion and progression of learners, as an example. It's a curriculum policy issue. But it is also equally an inclusive policy issue if one were to look at it. Because what it says is that, for example, in the foundation phase and in the senior phase, as well as intermediate phase, we progress learners. When you progress a learner, it is with the understanding why that policy is forward-looking. It is forward-looking, but also assumes that even at the level of the school that you have, a teacher will be able to understand that as children go to the next grade, the receiving teacher will be able to deal with the learning difficulties that have been brought about. And that's also an inclusion method that we have to deal with. But here, Honorable Bojana raised this particular problem, that in the current context there are still challenges that are being dealt with in respect of teachers, and I think as Kay articulated that problem. However, a question could then be asked, how then do we respond to that particular situation? Because we know it's a challenge of inadequate capacity that may be in the system. And in this particular regard, we would know that the teacher development framework that has been developed, that teacher development framework also is accompanied by milestones in terms of what it is that has to be done.
And it is a plan that government and the department have now put on the table to say, this is what we will do in respect of teacher development and teacher and ensuring that there is increased teacher capacity. So it is in that context here that we would also wish that this matter also, in terms of how this matter would also be located. As I said, some of the other questions I'm going to leave to Dr. Smilan. The last question that I would like to respond to is that which was raised by Honorable James about camp implementation. There will be a presentation coming on the camp. And we will try to articulate the challenges in relation to that in terms of what is happening. And I'd rather not actually engage more with that at this point in time, because those challenges, those questions have been raised, and maybe we will have to give a response, Honorable Chair, if you allow, in the presentation of the case. I will allow Dr. Simelani to give you the rest.
Can I
talk?
Thanks, Honorable Chair, and thanks to members for those questions. Maybe the first question that I would like to respond to is the one that talks about the 94 schools, the reported 94 school service schools, as opposed to ensuring inclusivity in all schools. This is a phase in process, because even our action plan to 2014 speaks to increasing the number of full service schools. So this is a progressive process. It's a phase in one, because it also is coupled with resourcing those schools that are made inclusive schools. Then in terms of the plan to increase the number of schools where at least one teacher has been trained to identify special needs. Yes, that is a plan, but as a system, that plan is developed from teacher development plan and the strategy to make sure that also the issues of special needs are addressed in building capacity within the teacher cadre. It is there, but it's not in our possession as a unit focusing on inclusivity. In terms of the number of teachers who the 700 and the 1,000 respectively, there was a question around that about what informs the 700 for visually impaired schools, or for the schools for the blind, and the 1,000. That was the audit that the department did in those schools to establish the number of teachers that are teaching in those schools. So those are the teachers that are going to be trained in the 3 years in those specialized areas. And also to add that these are the first two disabilities that the department has prioritized for now, but it does not take away the responsibility of the department to build capacity in dealing with other disabilities. Mr. Mutsue has spoken to the CAP and the training and the issue of institutions which will be involved. I won't go into that. It may also be captured under that presentation. Barriers to learning from 2001, and that maybe there has been a slow progress on the side of the department to address the question of barriers to learning. We need to acknowledge that it's a challenge. Barriers to learning in the first instance, to deal with barriers to learning requires a multidisciplinary approach. In other words, as the Department of Education, we can't do it alone. We need the cooperation of other stakeholders, NGOs who are working in this area, higher education institutions, other government departments as well, for instance, Department of Health, Department of Social Development, and of course to a certain degree Treasury, because you know, data surveilling are resource intensive, and therefore funding is required to deal with it. So, and again, there is a question of lack of capacity in the country broadly when it comes to dealing with, especially some of the disabilities. One may make an example of, you know, converting material from text to braille. We only have got two braille houses in South Africa that are not only serving the Department of Education, but serving other departments and other sectors. So it's a question of capacity that needs to also be taken into account as well, which to a certain degree will contribute to the slow process or the slow pace at which barriers are and to learning are being addressed. About the 22 schools for the blind, the question was whether we only have got these as a department. Yes, there are only 22 special schools for the blind in the country. That's where we are in the system. Let me call the Adama if there is a question that I may have made.
I noted that there are questions that the department may not have necessarily given responses to, and I would want to clarify them quickly. The Honorable Punjan had also raised a question about saying we're talking about using districts to support. And yes, districts are inadequate. I think that observation is very critical in terms of how we move forward. One of the areas that we know that the success of the education sector, not only for inclusive education, but for almost every other thing that we do in basic education, relies on the capacity of the teacher. In that regard, I may indicate, for example, that's why the Minister of Basic Education has called for a meeting of the two directors last Thursday and Friday to continue to impress on the district director of the importance of the role that districts play, and equally indicating the key functions or roles that districts have to play in respect of support to schools. So when we put it here with respect to inclusive education, it is also done within that framework that says the success of any plan that we have in the improvement of support to schools, both to improve teaching and learning, but also ensuring inclusivity, relies on the capacity of districts. And we know, Chairperson, it is indeed true that there are districts of different capacities. But there are also those districts that have demonstrated that with adequate support that schools can stand around. And it is in that context that we will continuously see that the department will want to continuously strengthen the level of support. And I think in terms of strengthening the level of support, it's also just one simple thing is to clarify what the role of a district official will do. Because in many an instance that people have been doing certain functions, and yet those functions do not contribute to the goals that we all seek to achieve. And it is in that context that we need to realize and make sure that energy and capacity is directed to those specific areas that we would be looking at. Honorable McNeil has also raised a question about supplying names of full services for oversight, and I think we will make that available to the chair. And equally, in that report, we will give an indication of the challenges that these schools have experienced, because as the Honourable Dati was also mentioning, what would have been the success factor for the North West as compared to in one province as compared to the other, and if you will be able to see the kind of models that have come. For example, while we talk of full service schools as an example, we've also noted some very good models of inclusive education
support in the in KwaZulu-Natal compared to other projects, because it also differs from project to project in terms of the development and sectors, and that's what Chairperson will give an indication of the specific measures. Last Chairperson, there was a specific direct question by Honorable Kanyama. I know I've spoken to it about how we would want to move with the psychosocial support, but you intend to say psychology, and I just wanted to make sure that we clarify that this is this whole thing of psychologists and others as part of the psychosocial support is be taken into with the delivery agreement and the relationship between our department and Department of Health in terms of how we provide for that support. The one thing here that we have not mentioned here, which I think is important for the members and everybody else to know, is that in collaboration with the Department of Health, for example, this year already, oh, there are 100,000 grade 1 learners who have been screened for barriers. As they got into grade 1, 100,000 learners were already screened for barriers. And the plan with that is to make sure that those learners that have now been screened, data collected, and we also have to ensure the security of data. We have what we call the learner unit records information system in the department. What that needs to do is that we will capture that data of those learners on that system, and in time, we will be able to track where these learners are and ensure that they will be appropriate. So that's an important matter that I wanted to give an indication. So work has already started in terms of, for example, with the Department of Health, through our health promotion unit, to train, to see 100,000 learners already who are entering into the school. If the capacity was better, then surely one would want to see that all grade 1 learners would have been screened. So that as we proceed, we are able to say all grade 1 learners have been screened. And I think that's all I wanted to say for you. Thank you, Chairperson.
Just a
few follow-up questions,
not like too long.
Chairperson,
thank you for your comments.
Actually, I don't think that's the thing that we have to go to the college. And maybe because I changed it, but I want to ask as the department, if there's a plan to transform the education of this country into inclusive education, probably very inclusive to me. You are saying every child in a classroom has been taken to the when the teacher walks into that class, he must be able to see the difference in what I believe. All learners are different. Now, we are talking of increasing the number to whatever we are putting in. But is there a plan to say that this country, eventually, we must be able to have every classroom friendly to everyone? Because we cannot continue to divide people, those who walk like this, who go into a particular class. It's like we need to go to the same class, especially, I don't know how to put it more frankly, I'm sure this time I get it.
Learners with special needs have been amalgamated in the mainstream. Mm-hmm. How do we do in assisting those learners to cope up with the situation? And their resources there must be visible in those people so that they can be assisted. And also, Chairperson, I should think the monitoring mechanism from the national department, provincial, up to the grassroots, it needs to be improved. Because it's where the problem lies. The department is doing very well at national, but the implementation part of it is visible on the ground. Thank you very much.
It's not that taking that operation. Why is it so that work is in place of the 22 schools of that is? Let's also have both the names and where they are located.
Yeah. Thank you, Chairperson. For inter-academic year, the department special need that is broken, so that this time you come and present to us with a picture of what you are dealing with, what is the situation of this learner. Because to me, I really feel very strong that world school, especially, are getting a role deal. Because you go to any world school, definitely you find that, how do I put it? And if any school in our area should be a full family school, whatever you call it, but you know, what you see outside there is really much and inclusive, this inclusive education becomes very because fitness, well, this is really, I think we've talked about generality. What are the specifics in each province? What is the population of such learner? What are the specific things that we are doing, which are measurable, which we can go next to and say, this is what the department is doing within this current year?
Chairperson, apart from what the honorable thing, very horrible, and but if we run away, too far away from some of the good things that one would really benefit from, that happened during that era, we might be making a mistake. See, I'm saying this because in the past there was a psychological service in the Department of Education. Now, I agree, we can work hand in hand with other departments. I mean, obviously, education will not have nurses. Education will not have social workers. We depend on other departments. But my worry is, why can't we go back to psychological service? What is wrong with psychological service? We can call it another name if we want to run away from that. But the point is, we are running too far away sometimes. We are running too far away from some of the good things. I don't say about people, because sometimes when you say this, people look at you and say, he says about people, but I'm not saying that. What I'm saying is, there are certain things that were good that we really could keep. Like the psychological services, it doesn't help to go and consult a clinical psychologist to have a charge in education. No. We have educational psychologists who have resigned, who are now in private practice, who have gone to the private sector, because they were converted into managers in the district. We know it. Now, why can't we go back to the basics? Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, I would like to jump in where Honorable Botswana talked with regard to specifics. And I want to take the department to task to tell us you have screened 100,000 learners in grade 1. You screened them. Now that you screened them, what is going to happen? For instance, if you take 10% of 100,000, you will have 10,000 learners with learning barriers all over South Africa. Now, what are you doing about it? Do you send those learners to remedial classes? Do you send them to special schools? What are you doing? Those are the things that we need to know. Because if you take a calculation of 10,000 learners in South Africa, that comes down to about 1,000 in each province. 1,000 learners in the Eastern Cape, you know, being screened and not being attended to. It's a problem. You cannot have a situation like that. So, although Mpuchwana is correct to say, we hear general things. Honorable Kosana said inclusive education is not taking seriously. I would like to say, because we don't get comfortable information to say yes, no, things are happening in inclusive education. Thank you,
Jeff. In line with the policy, is our teacher training curriculum changing radically? Obviously, if we're visualizing every school, we're pretty much visualizing every teacher having situations in their class that they then need to deal with differently to perhaps how we came into school. So it's more kind of emphasis that's being put on there. And then why does policy necessitate teacher assistance to a greater degree than it's already needed in terms of class size? And I know that anyone who's union oriented wants to jump out of their chair and scream because it can't be done. But clearly we do have a need with the class size and need your assistance. And when it comes to disabilities, you would see that being an even greater need.
Thanks a lot. I think the answer just answers the thing. Well, if you are going to guess, you can ask a few questions, then I'll just make a summary of everything.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. Maybe starting with the inclusivity in every classroom. The approach of the department, one is through the curriculum. That is why there are methodologies that have been introduced to make sure that teachers in the classroom are able to capture the interest and participation of every learner. We may not go to specifics, but those have been built into the CAT document. They have those methodologies for inclusivity, to accommodate inclusivity in the classroom. And the training will be taken down to school level. It has already taken place with provincial and district officials. So that then at those levels, officials are able to support schools in ensuring that teachers are teaching every learner in the classroom. And therefore we increase participation and maximize. Maybe that's the first point. And that also speaks to the issue of remedial classes, which was raised earlier on. That maybe if we talk inclusivity, maybe we should slowly move away from putting emphasis on remedial classes and taking learners out of the mainstream classroom, put them aside in special classes, and keep them there for their life in the school setting. What we are saying with inclusivity approach is that learners, if there is additional support required, that may be provided through certain means, but the learners should still come back to the mainstream classroom and learn with the rest. That's one approach. And again, to add to that, issues of additional support with some of the learners require that learners be provided with assistive devices, which may be maybe their disabilities and therefore enhance their participation. Provinces are procuring assistive devices. There has been a tender that's been running for 2.5 years at national, and provinces have participated in that, and they have been buying assistive devices through that tender. And we have even engaged national treasury maybe to coordinate the procurement of those devices, taking it forward, because the tender has a lifespan and it has expired. So there must be provisions made to go forward so that provinces will accept the devices and buy for their schools progressively. And National Treasury has agreed to coordinate the different departments, for instance, health and social development as well as education, because with assistive devices, there are devices that are not educational by nature. For instance, an example of wheelchairs. Wheelchairs are not necessarily educational devices. So they cannot be expected to be provided by the Department of Education. But we need to work as departments, and therefore each department should come to the party and play their role. For instance, the provision of wheelchairs to those requiring them is a responsibility of health. But somebody has got to coordinate that. Everything has got to happen within a coordination framework. And that is what we are currently working on. And by so doing, I believe we as a department, we are taking the issue of inclusion seriously. And that is why
Even if you look at the action plan, you look at the threat plan, you look at minister's delivery agreement, there are issues of inclusivity captured in there. So there is a commitment from the side of the department. Maybe the issue is the implementation, which may be challenging, because problems are vast and great. Other inputs were just requests, which we have noted and are going to provide the list of the 22 schools and the allocation, which goes with the full service schools. And we are also going to provide the report in terms of number of learners with special needs per province, you know, and presenting those steps. The 100,000 learners screened in grade 1 through the mass screening program, first of all, one needs to mention that, to honorable members, that the screening was focusing on vision, it was focusing on hearing, it was focusing on hearing, and a few other aspects. Now, with regard to and even nutrition, or nutrition broadly. So there are programs that are responding to that. But with regard to learners who were trained for vision and hearing impairment, then the next step is the department is looking at providing assistive devices, for instance, hearing aids, for instance, maybe glasses or spectacles. Which is part of providing assistive devices to take the intervention further. So it did not stop at the screening, but there are plans in place to provide devices to those learners who require them. I think that should be that. Teacher assistants, there is a great need for teacher assistants. We know that some special schools actually do have teacher assistants, but not all of them even. In terms of the mainstream, because we have 27,000 schools, so it might be difficult to provide teacher assistants for every classroom. So what has been approached from the department, it has been to introduce what is referred to as the learning support facilitators. Those are qualified teachers who are employed by provinces and are based at district level, so that they are not placed in individual schools, but what they do is they provide additional support to schools moving around the district, so that all schools within districts are served. That has been the idea. They are not in existence in all provinces yet, but we do have learning support facilitators or educators in the Western Cape. We have them in KwaZulu-Natal. For instance, KZN employed about 94 in December of 2010 and placed them at district offices to provide their support to teachers in the classroom where the support is lacking. It's a progressive and a phased-in approach, because of the
thanks a lot. I don't think this is like this relevant. But to me, we have this white paper recently in here. The department do speak to challenges and it differ from province to province, and support differ from province to province too. But now we need to have a detail on how, you know, these challenges are being addressed. And then it comes to your annual performance plan. Like you referred to the action plan from 2014. When it comes to the annual performance plan, we need to have the details on what are you going to do in this financial year. And, you know, the financial year from 2011 to 2012, we need to have that detail. Then we also ask for the breakdown of the 94 schools, and then the breakdown of the 22 schools. And now, when it comes to sketches, because last year we visited a tour of fields, and we were informed that when council acts, it's not supportive of the needs of the learners at, you know, that school that we were discussing. So, under CAC, we will speak with. And I think at the end of this month, we are meeting the department. We will go through the ACT and then we're going to discuss, you know, this document that you gave us now, this presentation. We'll be discussing it a second time. Because there's so many questions and a few answers at the moment. Thank you. Let us go to the next presentation.
Thank you very much, Robert Chatterton. The next presentation we want to make is the National Curriculum Statement with Article 12, the Curriculum and Assessment Policy Statement. Okay, you mentioned the curriculum in respect to the schools of skills. And I should indicate that, in fact, the school of skills should have been covered in inclusive education as well. And I think it's a method of study. We have noted that there are these schools where curriculum is in a challenge. And we have noted that. And I think it is more of a challenge because the current curriculum landscape does not provide for that level of vocational stream as is required by the school of kids and in the method that our colleagues are dealing with nonetheless, as it relates to the curriculum and assessment policy statement. I thought it was important to give background as well, so that we know where the CAP emanated from. Members would recall that in 2008, or then the Minister of Justice, or 2009, Minister of Justice complained about challenges in respect of implementation of curriculum. And the heart of this was the design of our curriculum in terms of, as members would remember, our curriculum is designed in terms of learning outcomes and assessment standards. So you get a curriculum that says that has for every subject maybe 4 learning outcomes, and each learning outcome having a whole range of assessment standards. What that design structure had assumed was that every teacher would be able to understand how to interpret the learning outcomes and assessment standards as a means, therefore, of teaching. As a result of that, we know that the practice then was such that if you went from one building to the next, you got a teacher or a district official saying, but when teachers have to report or report, they have to report against each assessment standard. Now, you can understand that if learning outcome 1 has 20 assessment standards, learning outcome 2 has 30 assessment standards, what it meant is that teachers have to bring knowledge into those small little children. And in their recording, it also suggested that a teacher had to be more of an administrator than a teacher themselves. And I think that is at the heart of this. And this whole question of abandoning some administrative power. The third was also a question of interpretation. Because if you had assessment standards and it depended on the level of capacity and experience of the teacher, a teacher would know the depth and breadth in which they would have to deal with a specific subject. But that was the learning outcomes and assessment standards were open to interpretation. With the result of that, going from one school to the next, you find that the curriculum was interpreted differently. All of these cases were issues that were at the heart of the decision that the minister took. But I think a most critical one about the curriculum was that despite our curriculum having spoken to as an internationally comparable curriculum, and this was done not by the Department of Basic Education, but it was independently done by studies that were conducted by Umalusi and Kisa, as well as the IDB independently, that all came to a common conclusion, we still found that learner performance, especially for the majority of learners in English and literacy, is characteristically low. And this was just more from international and local assessments that were conducted in the country. So those were the concepts. As a result, you recall that the minister put out a team together, a ministerial team that had to go and listen to the teachers, to hear from the teachers themselves what it is that they are going to want. So it was no longer
a theoretical underpinning. While the theoretical underpinnings of the curriculum will clear, but it's also important to listen to what teachers would see further enhanced by this curriculum to implement in the classroom. There were public hearings with the teachers. There were also written submissions that were done via email in the portal. The minister gave the team the terms of reference that are indicated. But in the terms of reference, the minister further went straight to the team. Identify the challenges, see how those challenges that teachers face can be addressed, and then develop a set of practical interventions. On the basis of that, you would recall some of the key recommendations that I will not go into, but I want to mention, other than the CAP, you recall that one of the decisions that was taken was that teachers wanted curriculum documents to be rationalized into a single set of coherent curriculum documents. And in this particular regard, that's how then the development of CAP arose. But equally, there was this whole question of how do we know how the system is performing and the conducting of assessment. But in terms of the challenge, one of the critical challenges that we are facing in this school was this whole overload. For example, in the current context, a learner in grade 1, 2, and 3 does three learning programs: literacy, numeracy, and writing. When they get to grade 4, and they are still babies, the children have now to move from three learning programs to 8 learning areas, which means that in a year, you immediately change the load. But in addition to that, not only do you do that, but in addition to that, for the majority of learners whose language of instruction in grade 1, 2, and 3 was not their mother tongue or home language or the language that they were instructed in, for example, if a child attends a Sizwana school where instruction is in Sizwana, when they get to grade 4, they all of a sudden have to now do Sizwana as a home language. But equally, their instruction in mathematics and in any of the subjects is no longer in Sizwana, but it's in English or Africa, whatever the case may be. And therefore, there's also a change in the language of learning and teaching. And that was why the bullet number 4 chapter was also a recommendation that came from the team, that they reduce the overload in the intermediate phase by reducing the number of subjects that are offered from current 8. And if one took languages as 2, then in fact it were 9 subjects, reducing them from 9 to 6. So that's basically the issue. And the last one here is this whole question of the role of textbooks. There has been a tendency in the system that textbooks were not important anymore with the introduction of the NCA. And I think it was an important statement to make that we have to accept the role of textbooks, notwithstanding other supplementary and support materials. But it was saying, let's ensure that every child has a textbook and there is work that is proceeding in that particular regard. Now, as it then goes to the development of the CAP, after the minister accepted the report of the curriculum for the committee, the minister then appointed a committee that would then oversee the development of the CAP. As you recall, the committee was chaired by Dr. Lubisi, who was then the HOD for education in KwaZulu-Natal, who subsequently the director general in the presidency. Members of the ministerial team that oversaw the development of the CAP included Ms. Penny Dingebo, who was at that point the Deputy Director General in the department, who is now currently the HOD in the Western Cape. It included Dr. Ashla Hosey from UCT. It included Sumela from La Posa. It included Sidini Kolo, who is now at State. It included Fatima Dada, who is now with PSN. It included Vina Ramaswamy, the Chief Director for Curriculum in GDE. It also included attempts on the committee and ex officio of the Department of Education. So, Chair, those are the members. What the committee then did is, and Alfred Kimball, who is also the chairperson of the Association of Mathematics Educators of South Africa. I did not put their names here, chairperson, because their names were published in the government. Nonetheless, the committee, when it started its work, it had to appoint writers for the CAP. And it appointed a total of 180 writers who would then develop the CAP for those that had to be developed, but equally those that would measure and translate the CAP from grade R to 12.
you see the date on which the writers began to deal with their work. The criteria for writers is indicated that we, the Ministerial Project Committee, look into persons or teachers that have experience in teaching the subject, with the ability to write critically, who would meet the time for some lines, as well as having deep levels of knowledge of the subject and broad understanding of the subject itself. So you note, therefore, from the number of members that were elected. From April to September of 2010, the members, the writers began to write. And after the ethics required by policy, the Minister of Basic Education has invited the public and stakeholders to comment on the curriculum and assessment policy statement. The comment process was done through government notice and government address on that day. But it also became very clear during the process of comment that the Minister received additional requests for extra time. Why do you note that the original time would have been the 24th or other days, the 11th of October for the other? The minister received a request for an additional time, and the minister was then able to provide for extended time for all of the others for the comments on the test to close on the 18th of October of 2010. I could indicate here that the consultation process was regular, and it further included discussion with the reference group over and above the writers who were appointed. The minister or the ministerial project committee also put together a reference team, which was also another set of subject persons who would serve as a reference group with the writers so that they could study and comment. A total of 1,844 submissions were received from the public comment process, as it will be accepted that when you receive so many of the comments, you have to evaluate them individually. They were evaluated individually and considered and accommodated where deemed necessary by the writing team as well as the Ministerial Project Committee. I can indicate to you, Chair, here, that that's when I realized that unless you make a decision about curriculum, you'll never get it right. Because even up to today, you still get people that say that you must teach this and not that. So everybody has an opinion of what you need to teach. And at some point, the minister has and the Ministerial Project Committee has to come to a point of saying, this has gone to a public comment, this is what the majority of people say, and this is what is found, and therefore this is what has to be approved. Chair, I could indicate at this point that the revised CAP incorporated the public comments that were submitted, and these have subsequently, all of the CAPs have subsequently been submitted to the Head of Education Department Committee meeting, and they were subsequently submitted to the Council of Education Ministers meeting on the 2nd of June to be declared as policy. Now you could see, Chair, that this is the entire process that was followed. In terms of status of CAPs, as we say, they have all been developed and submitted to publishers for technical development. This is a question that Honorable Davis has asked previously earlier on. Just to indicate that as CAPs became available, they were sent out to publishers. So it is not that once they had taken into account public comment process and they were finalized, they were then made available to publishers. And this was really understanding that publishers had to begin to deal with the development of the text. I should indicate here as well that publishers have also been met. The department has continuously met with the publishers to ensure that this process can be managed. And in fact, we also have invited publishers to develop textbooks in relation to the CAP. And as of last week, when the closing date for registration of submission closed, we had just way over 3,000 individual submissions for the foundation phase 1, 2, and 3, and over 500 submissions for all subjects for grade 10. So that's the indication of what participants have indicated to us they will be able to submit. CAPs are already at the design and layout stage. The DDE will, there's a request that has gone to the minister that in the interim period we make them available on the website and PDF website, etc.
why we await the final proclamation in the government address, because this process is also taking time, so we have requested that running to take place. We will ensure, Chairperson, that every teacher and every school receives a set of checks, and that's just to ensure that we teachers and schools would know where what it is that they have to teach. Chairperson, I should also indicate about the check that we have also taken seriously that it's important that work that has been done by the Ministry of Project Committee can also be quality assured and benchmarked. We have approached Umanusi as a quality assurer to further look into this process. This was never done with the National Curriculum Statement, by the way. Every other aspect that Umanusi has done was done after curriculum implementation, but we thought in this case we would want to make sure that that level of quality assurance would be done as implementation takes place. And Umanusi has responded with those dates to us in terms of how they would carry out the quality assurance. And Umanusi and the quality assurance have indicated that they may not necessarily be doing quality assurance as much as they would be further wanting to do a benchmarking exercise to determine whether, now that we have redesigned our curriculum from learning outcomes and assessment standards to provide more specificity with respect to what teachers have to teach, that it would still be more or less comparable to other counties as well. And it is in this regard that the humanity has been at this particular time. In terms of training of CAP, the question that also came, I can indicate that there are two levels at which training was intended to take place. At this point in time, because we know that many problems that had arisen previously was the extent to which there were different sets of documents that were used in the system for the training of teachers in relation to CAP. We have taken a view as a department and provincial department of education that we will have a common training manual that will be used to get teachers to understand what it is that CAPs are all about. The foundation phase CAP training toolkit has been done and has been finalized, and you will see in the second bullet on the presentation here that the already 336 subject advisors in all of the 9 provinces and 2,390 subject advisors in FET in all provinces have attended the orientation workshop on CAP between April and May of 2011. What is currently then happening is that all provinces have submitted to the department the date on which they will then be continuing with the orientation workshop for teachers in each one of those areas. And the training in many provinces would be beginning now in the June-July. The training toolkits have benefited from feedback from subject advisors in provinces, and we are now, and we have made this available to our provincial colleagues to ensure that they can support, they can take it further. You will note, therefore, Chair, and honorable members, that provincial departments of education and the districts are to ensure that teachers are trained and provided with support in the implementation of the CAP. The Council of Education Ministers and Head of Education Committee has indicated that the training budget for CAP would come from teacher development budget in the respective province. There has been, Honorable Chair, an indication that that talks to suggest that CAP was actually a major deviation from the current curriculum. And in fact, if one were to ask, what curriculum do we have in South Africa? I think we should say we still have the National Curriculum Statement with Africa, which comprises the following: a curriculum and assessment policy statement for all approved subjects listed in the document. So you then get a CAP as a set that consolidates everything that has to be taught. So the CAP on their own, without other supporting policy documents, would be needed. So it's important that it's understood that the CAP on their own are not the entire curriculum. They are the curriculum, but there's also policy in respect of how curriculum must also be interpreted. Secondly, that is why we said we have the National Curriculum Statement Grade R to 12. That comprises the curriculum and assessment policy statement. That then, which indicates the subject. And we have then the policy document that indicates program and promotion requirements of the NCS. What this means, Chairperson, is that while we know that there are 29 subjects that learners that are available on offer in SET, while we know that there will be 6 subjects that are on offer in the intermediate phase, while we know that there are 4 subjects that will be on offer, what this policy document then says, it gives a policy spending in terms of combination of subjects that learners will then be required to have, so that in terms of certification, they would then comply with specific minimum requirements and the promotion and progression, the program and promotion requirements document. The third one, which is the National Protocol on Assessment, it is a document that has also been put to consolidate all of the different levels that are contained in the CAP as well as in the policy document, but equally further give guidance to schools in terms of how learner evidence, learner profile, mark sheet, and all of those must be kept. So it provides for clear guidance to teachers in terms of how all of these have to be done. As in terms of the two documents, the CAP and the policy document, these have gone through already for approval by the Council of Education Ministers if they are waiting already. The National Protocol on Assessment is going out on public comment process, and I think if it's not this Friday, it will be in the next week, and it will be going out for a 21-day period, and after the public comment process, it will then also go through the process for final promulgation in this particular regard. Chair, I should indicate to the Honourable House and members that an important step, which is different from what previous processes had done, was carried out with the CAP. The minister directed us to say, look, we have gone to teachers, we listened to what teachers wanted. Now that we have the CAP, can we do, and I have pointed here as a doability, and in fact it's not a good English word, but that I think it was just trying to find out how doable the CAP are in the classroom. And we call it a pre-implementation workshop. And we understand, and that workshop took place on the 23rd and 24th. What this workshop did, we gave out CDs of all of the CAPs that have been developed, to all teacher unions in the country to distribute to subject teachers, expert teachers, and they were to look into this to determine whether the CAPs in their current format will be a support for the teacher in the classroom to ensure that teaching and learning can take place. Chairperson, I'm happy to report that after that pre-implementation workshop, in fact, at the pre-implementation workshop, we thought that we would have a massive number of teachers coming, but it was not to be, because immediately feedback we received from the teacher union and from the teachers was that we should only bring to that workshop those 7 subjects that are indicated, nor any other subject, meaning that all other subjects in the form in which they were presented have been found at the level of teachers that have evaluated them to be adequate and providing that level of support. The only subjects that were requested to be brought to the workshop are those as indicated on the screen. And the outcome of the workshop was that it did not mean that those subjects were not accepted, but teachers still failed. That especially in some of those subjects, there was still a whole question of overload. That while the captain attempted to cover almost everything, and that may then, depending on the expertise of the teacher and the competency, some teachers may not be able to cover finish the curriculum. And the question then is, what is it that we do? So we are now working on a model chairperson that says, given that it is not that the curriculum is bad, but it is too much overload, we would have to go out with assessment circulars to schools and give clear instructions of what areas that have to be covered over a period of time as we gradually increase the implementation, and so that the syllabi, if I were to use that term, would be clearly articulated for teachers. There was another view expressed, especially in relation to all of those subjects, was that the assessment, there were teachers that felt that assessment was being too prescriptive and it did not have to be prescriptive to them. So that if a teacher felt that I had wanted, they would want to do more than what was prescribed, or in another manner, they would also have room for their own professional development to be able to practice them. And I think we have made it clear that what is indicated in the CAP are the basic minimum standards that have to be met, and any other level of flexibility would be
allowed in South Africa to have that. Teachers, the last one issue that teachers spoke about very carefully and clearly was that they would need orientation. And as well as ensure that managers at the level of the school, principal and school management team, are actually orientated in terms of how they must understand the implementation of the CAP. At this point in time, just as said, we then have to come up with the implementation of the CAP to say, are we ready to get the implementation? You may recall that the Minister of Basic Education and the Council of Education Minister has made a decision that we must implement the CAP in terms of the timeline that has been that's indicated on the screen. And we would use 2011 as a period during which we will prepare the system for the introduction of the CAP in school. And in this regard, there are key four areas that we thought, unless they get done and get done well, implementation of the CAP may be compromised. It was about orientation and workshop for officials, principals and districts, teacher orientation and training, implementation and use of workbooks, as well as textbook preparation and question that Honorable Jay asked earlier on. Chairperson, I could report that all of those different workshops have begun to take place, as we indicated about the number of subject advisors that have also been trained. Work is proceeding to get the training of principals as well as school management teams in this regard. The use of workbooks is already training thereof took place as part of the foundation phase training to kids, as well as and textbook preparation, as we indicated, in the process that is currently taking place. We will be starting to screen textbooks for the foundation phase and grade 10 from the 27th of this month. And that is with a view to ensure that by the end of July, we would have a quality national catalog for which procurement of textbooks and LCSM will be able to come out. Chairperson, thank you very much. That is all about the CAP.
Thanks so much.
Until
you can take the questions. Let's start with Uncle James. And then Uncle Shwana.
Thank you very much for this presentation. CAP is the third curriculum change we've seen since 1994. And curriculum change is a very difficult thing for teachers because they have to create pedagogical uncertainty, which is a tough thing to deal with. But we understand why this has happened, because the first change was the outcome-based education framework, which was a Rolls-Royce designed for a middle-income country, and it was a complete disaster. And so what we're trying to do is recover from this, so I understand and support this CAP process. When it comes to CAP, there are three things that need to be done, right? One needs to reconceptualize what was before in terms of modern knowledge. One requires the publication of good textbooks. And in our case, we've also added workbooks, which is a very good thing. And thirdly, you need to train teachers. So those three things are quite fundamental. What we cannot understand is why the department is rushing this process. And the only explanation for the rush is the fact that the minister signed a performance agreement with President Zuma that required her to deliver this before the 2014 election. Which means that the rush is a consequence of political imperatives rather than the educational needs of children. So the really kind of fundamental issue. And just say to you that there is no precedent or parallel for producing quality outcomes from such a rush process. Just a quote from COSA, the Public Association of South Africa. After a meeting with the Department of Education, they reported that, and I'm quoting, the plan of implementing all the grades in 1 year was not feasible, and that education quality and cost effectiveness would be compromised. It takes 18 years, 2 years to produce a good textbook. It does not take 6 weeks, six months. We cannot do it. We have to cut corners. I have the entire process reviewed by the Oxford University Press, and the point is that it's important to take your time with it. everyone's book quality fades in profit. So I've written a review of this entire process and will appear in today's article on the office page after doing some very careful research, because I believe that compressing the time is not worth it. It creates an urgency that will undermine quality. And so we're listening to the department, and they obviously have to do what they need to do, but I'm very worried about the rush around this. And I still think there is time to revise the schedule. You don't have to finish it by 2014. This is the educational need. If the driver for this is politics, then it's absolutely wrong. We must ensure that the educational needs of children are first priority and not politics.
Thank you, Professor. I'm always thinking of this Professor. I need to get an explanation as to what informs the numbers that are saying for the foundation phase versus the FCC. Because I thought the foundation phase is bigger and amplified, maybe my text wrong, than FCC quality. But if you realize that we are only 336,000 subjects at for the whole, I think for the whole night problem, because it's in the same sense that for the whole problem. But when you come to FCC, then you train more. And this country is taking as a foundation, like say, my understanding is that once you meet up on the foundation, your education will be taught for life. And I think that's what this country is doing. Like concentrating on your MBTs, your whatever. But the foundation is not taken into that, that is according to me. And I'm like taking what informs this. What I would ask that we need more of this advice as a foundation. But that's what I know for sure. If you want to know the sort of like that, the subject advisors do not go to school. You know? They don't go, they don't visit school. If you visit school, like each principal or each faculty manager visit school, they find that they sign one, so that they are seen to have gone, they may be in a course. It's not like it's doing their job.
Chairperson, thank you very much. Let me welcome the presentation made by the department. I should think this is a very good document. And I must say, it's not a document that is addressing an electionary issue. It's addressing an educational issue. And also, in a democratic state, education must be developed to meet the standards internationally. It's what the document is. And I should think we're dealing with the policy. If the department is dealing with this task, planning in dealing with the policy education in the country, welcome that and support.
At the same time, we think
the catalog of textbooks of nationality are recommended, you think that teachers would claim that they might have made particular recommendations and upon deliver, they don't have the hardware that the teachers have. And I may not be sure in terms of your own understanding whether you did come across those instances and what happened, who has been claimed that we needed this kind of assistance in their own view, generally they think it's a good assistance, and what gets delivered is something that how do you address those particular kinds of and in some instances, they even receive more textbooks than what they need in that classroom. And probably have another school that may not even receive enough for their own learning. You may have a school in some areas that received, instead of about 50, because that's what they needed, they received 150 of those classrooms. And so, how do you monitor that they found delivery of conditional pieces are in line with what has been requested by Barrett.
Why I'm asking that is to say, I don't wish to see in the near future some of other changes that you say in our changes because of one change or whatever these things you are raising or the way relations will take place. And lastly, Chair, we're talking of this textbook that have been here a lot, yes, of which we are happy about. But I'm also concerned of the workbook that has even started in this year, continuing, and we know the budget that the government has been used on that to say, how are we changing everything to be in line with what is needed here with the text? The workbooks that are out now that the numbers are using, are we going to see any changes? What are the plans around that for the second week?
Thanks for
that,
Chair.
Hello, Chair. Thank you very much. The questions are very, very important as we take note of them. Another day made a statement, and I would not answer it from a political point of view. I'm not a politician. I do, however, know that at the heart of what CAP seeks to address is bringing relief in the classroom for a teacher who may not know how best to interpret the current design of the curriculum, which presents them with learning outcomes and assessment standards, which they may not necessarily be able to interpret up to the level that students show that learners would get a confidence in that aspect. Perhaps another way of looking at CAP is, are CAP a significant deviation from the current national curriculum statement that we have? And truth of the matter is, CAP are being developed or have been developed, the first documents that were used to develop CAP, it's nothing new but the same subject statements that are currently in the system. And it is on that basis that, what CAP has got to do was to provide for that level of certification. And it is on that basis, CAP, that all of the decisions that have been taken have been motivated in that particular regard. Notwithstanding all other methods that may still fail, there would be repackaging, there could be reorganization. But truth of the matter is, it did not take away from how it developed, if one were to remember how the MCS was developed, yesterday, how the CAP was developed. There has been an indication of tight time frame
But there's also been an indication in our interaction with publisher that the deadline can be met. Furthermore, Chairperson, as I indicated, that one of the key things that I know that the department has done was also to call for publishers to submit, because before Facebook can be screened, the department calls on publishers to make known the titles that they will submit. I can confirm again that as it relates to the foundation phase, there are over 3,000 submissions that have been registered by publishers. There are over 589 titles that have been registered for first by publishers for credit check. So on the basis of that, I'm not too sure of the communication that publishers may be, and then they would be giving a different interpretation. The one matter that we need to give very clear care is this matter that relates to, and I think Honourable Makubela was beginning to point to it, was that as we develop a national catalog, a policy decision has been taken that the national catalog that will be developed will have a limited number of titles. In the past, with the FET catalog that is currently the catalog that's been assisted, there's a catalog that has taken all other books that would have been approved. But in the current policy directive that is there, and publishers know about it, is that the catalog will be limited. Limited to a number of textbooks, which would further seek to make sure that books that get finalized on the catalog that would then be used. That which books we will use state money to go and make sure that we deliver the curriculum would also be quality. And I think that's an important matter that we also need to be able to clarify. The third element about the national catalog, if I were to, if you allow me, Chair, to clarify, is that the catalog will further give guidance to teachers in terms of what each of the books contains, so that the selection of books may be an easier method to deal with, unlike we have done in the past. Honorable Makubela also was asking about this question about how schools oftentimes make requisitions and yet they do not necessarily get the book. I know that has been, that there have been reports like that. But in cases where I know such instances may have taken place, is where a province may have opted to go for economies of scale. That's the reason why the limitation of the catalog is one of the other driving factors. In the current context, yes, only 45% of South African children have access to text. And yet, we spend big amounts of money on text. And clearly, research has demonstrated that the challenge with not having every child to have a text is because you would find that there would be small orders placed with publishers, 2 books, there 3 books, there 4 books, there, and that then actually gets the cost of textbooks to rocket, and that then makes it impossible, therefore, from allocations that are there, that can actually allocate all children, that the system has been unable to get every child a textbook. Hence, the national catalog and the limitation there too is one way by which the system is seeking to ensure that we can begin to address the whole question of economies of scale and pooling them on. The second question is in relation to schools getting more textbooks than is required. And I want to relate this more than the textbooks, I want to relate it to the current situation we have had with the workbooks. Because when we distributed workbooks, it began to clearly demonstrate a major problem in the system in respect of the quality of the data. There are instances where more quantities have been provided for than was required. In other cases, less quantities provided for. But that's all of the data that one gets from the image database. And therefore, it has actually begun to say to the system, there are other quality indicators that we need to take care of in respect of data quality. And I think that is a matter that is also receiving attention. As a result of that, for workbook 2, for example, having noted the delivery of workbook 1 and the challenges that arose out of that, the department has also had to go back to provinces to determine, to re-verify the information, but equally also use the data that was coming from schools
as a means of ensuring that we can cover up for the shortfall in the methodology that we use in that particular regard. The Honorable Mushwana asked about the training of foundation faith, the numbers that are don't correlate, and indeed it is true that our focus is training on foundation faith. But at this point in time, when provinces were asked to bring, they were only allowed to bring a limited number, because that was with the view that provinces would be able to provide additional support. However, we take this. But be that as it may, let me also indicate that why there are also so many other numbers for the FET is because in each of the FETs, we have had to make sure that there was also kept training in respect of specific subjects. Remember, in the foundation phase, you get one teacher teaching all of the four subjects. So a grade one teacher would teach you. But yes, in the FET, we also had to make sure that math subject advisors were brought in, physical science, and so on and so on and so on. And that is why you also see the number having gone so significantly high with respect to subject advisors that have been trained. We agree with you. We concur with the whole issue that subject advisors don't necessarily support schools adequately as it requires. But honorable members may recall that the department is also in the process of strengthening districts, and one of the things that has been done in the reorganization of districts is the whole question of giving subject advisors to clarify what the role of subject advisors is. It's very clear in the document that begins to talk to the reorganization. So that subject advisors know that when they are the last line of defense or the first line of defense, whichever one looks at it, between a teacher who's in a school and themselves before they can even reach a provincial office. And I think that's an important effort. But we do take cognizance, Honorable Chair, of Honorable Mishama's issue with respect to the role of subject advisors. The questions raised by Honorable Mishama with respect to that teachers are not supporting the test. In fact, because they consider assessment to be prescriptive, in fact, it is not necessarily that they do not support. They are necessary for all the tests that have been raised, especially in the subjects that were identified. That there were sections, and it was, I can indicate that in this particular regard, it was more in geography and in accounting. Those are the two tests where they specifically mentioned that in a way that the tests were presenting the assessment section, it was being too prescriptive, and they would want to see flexibility in ensuring that those should be considered as minimum standards. And I think it's a matter that the department is looking into. You also, Honorable Kwanchala is also asking about the support by parents in terms of SGB involvement, and I think we agree that parents are important in this regard, and we can confirm that we have presented and given regular updates to SGB formation. On a quarterly basis, the department meets with the SGB formation through what we call the National Consultative Forum. And it is through that forum that on a regular basis we have presented an update on the case up to this stage. On the Rugina speaks to the what the department will be doing in respect of the challenges that we raised at the pre-implementation workshop. I think one of the immediate issues that we know is that we have taken note of those specific challenges in the report. And one way of mitigating, for example, in terms of overload, is to actually give clear instructions to the system of what it is that you have kept implemented will be implemented. For example, there's already now in the current context effective that we would know what will be assessed in grade 12. We will issue out what we call an examination instruction. But this time around, it will be an instruction in terms of what area of the curriculum will be covered in the remaining period in a phase implementation manner. The second issue, which is another matter that is not necessarily reflected here on our chair session, on the same question that Honorable Ginas asked, is what about, because those challenges remain and therefore they must be dealt with. You may know that the minister has directed that a national institute for curriculum and professional development be established. And it is having to then take all of these methods into that institute so that all of these other research elements or areas that we are unable to solve through this process or curriculum will continuously be referred to or be replaced by that entity with a view that we may be able to get we may refresh our curriculum as and when it's required and not necessarily have to wait, as was indicated by Honorable James previously, that this is a fair change that we have. We should not have, I think we should allow the curriculum to stabilize, but all from both areas where there might be a need for refreshment and realignment, such may be done, and the National Institute for Curriculum and Professional Development is intended to be in those specific areas. With respect to the way group, are we aligning them with the CAP? And there seems the answer is yes. But equally, members should also recall that the way group for 2011 are consumable. So in 2012, new way group will come. That will then be, must then be in alignment directly with what is required of the CAP and so on. And the last one was about the emergency grade 10 implementation. I think it's a method that we've also taken with emergency honorable chair to make sure that we can get an indication of what would be happening. But our view from where we sit is that there is very little, it is highly unlikely that we may have a different report given the source document that has begun to develop the chair. Because if our curriculum was the same as, or if not a modification or improvement of what the current design of the MCS were, then our view is that it may be found to still be meeting. Yeah, I think we have responded to the questions that have been posted.
Thank you. Only one follow-up. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. I have not found out from the department what action has been to the criticism from a number of academic and researchers that we tend to use concepts and terms which are not easily understood by the practitioners, by our educators. Like PEP, for instance. Is there any other way how we could put this in a friendly, understandable way? What is PEP? What are you trying to do? Academics have never done criticism. Quiz up all other terms that are not easily. Now, I didn't teach them that. Some of these things, to me, really add more confusion and confusion. What has been your reaction to that criticism in general
sense? Yes,
Honorable Chair, in fact, that's the reason why that slide. Because I have noted that in South Africa, we tend to use acronyms without understanding the concept. And we want to brand that our curriculum as a national curriculum statement. But even if you were to call it national curriculum statement, others will come and say NPS. But we have to make sure that people understand that in the national curriculum is article, which comprises those sets of documents. And another question, I think it's true, because the minute if you then listen to, I think it's the South African way of speaking. Not necessarily also educated, because when you also understand the use of acronyms, it tends to become a nation where we tend to use acronyms. And I think it's something that must be considered. That's why you also have, we had problems with young people using the native language, which takes them away from the actual literacy that we want them to, where they have to write it to. When they have to write grade, they say GRA. And they forget that DR8 was no longer a mixed language, and when they get to the classroom, some of them, we have seen it in some scripts, that they then take that mixed language into the classroom, and I think that's a problematic issue.
Thanks a lot to the people. I think it's a very compelling report. And you know, and having all the timelines in place. I thank you, and I'm sure when it comes to our annual performance plan, we'll go through the report today. Thank you. We're going to do ECP now. So, now we can action plan.
Chairperson, I will attempt to stick to this. Any childhood development is actually one of the key output goals that are defined in our Action Plan 2020.
But as honorable members would know, that the success of any social development also requires closer collaboration between the Department of Social Development and the Department of Basic Education, as well as the Department of Health, and to a larger extent the Department of Cooperative Government. So there are those four departments that have to ensure that we collaborate on this particular matter. As I say, in the Action Plan 2014, which is a sector plan that the Minister of Education and the NECs have developed and are using to guide the development of the system, two important outputs have been indicated in there. That we would move towards universal access to great art. And in terms of that, it's having to ensure that all children have access to great art. And as you know, that currently 80% of schools offer great art. And we have been able to provide, and we need to provide, access to quality learning and teaching material to be used in line with the curriculum and assessment policy statement. But as you understand, this is a matter that refers specifically to grade R. ECD also covers your 0 to 4, and while this may be your 0 to 5 as well, but as you may understand, that this would be covering your 5-year-olds and so on. But the second issue, Chair, that is an output goal that is deliberately put out in the action plan, is that of improving the quality of ECD. And I think when we talk of the quality, is how do you ensure that when young people or young children, because they're children at this stage, how do you make sure that young children, when they go out to ECD centers, that they would get the appropriate level of stimulation that will ensure that they could have development, rich development, and then further enhance their being. And as, in terms of the improvement of quality ECD, as you may therefore, we want to make sure that we would have, we will increase the number of the access to learners who would have free grade R services, but equally ensure that all of the registered sites, in fact, offer quality programs. But the question is, how are you going to make sure that these two things happen? Okay, I thought, before I come to answer the question that I posed, was to give you a sense of the number of schools currently that are offering grade R in the system. And this is information that has been picked up from our IMIS database. You will note that the number has progressively increased from 12,000 schools in 2007 to 16,000 schools in 2010. 16,000 schools in 2010. Similarly, you see that there has also been a gradual increase in the number of young children who have access grade R in our schools. With starting from 400, under 500,000 in 2007, the number going over 700,000 in 2010. And you can see that KwaZulu-Natal, Eastern Cape, and Limpopo have had a significant number of young children in that particular regard. When one looks at this also, you note that from our IMI database, we've also been able to gather the number of schools that are without grade R, if we were to consider primary schools that are there, and we're giving an indication, chairperson, of those numbers. I made a point to say, how are we going to increase access to grade R? Because that is what the Department of Basic Education will do. And this is separate to what the Department of Social Development would do in respect of offering support for learners 0 to 5. One of the immediate things, Chair, that we've noted we need to do with immediate effect, and this is jointly with our sister department, is to have data on community-based sites. Because at the moment, we can report comfortably and easily about learners in school, but we are unable to report on community-based sites, and because that data is not easily available. And we've taken a view that for us to talk about increasing access to grade R, it must be available, that great art must be available at home, and therefore community-based science are also a very important source of support in this particular region. Chairperson, the second thing that we're moving towards is that of including great art in the infrastructure plans of our new and upgraded school. So that as we move as a department with all of the new schools that will be built and with all of the primary infrastructure development that has to be done in primary schools, we would know that they would also include and take into account the access for children for great art. And finally, we would have to ensure that as a system we have a monitoring mechanism that will address those key areas. The second issue is increasing access to those young children, young people in the years 0 to 4 years. And I want to speak to the second bullet, because improving quality for these young children rests with this document, the standard document that was developed, that has been developed with the support of UNICEF previously. We have the National Early Learning and Development Standard. This standard tells you what types and forms of stimulation you have to give to a child of 0 to 6 months, for example, or 7 months to 12 months, and so on. And it is standards that begin to give an indication of what it is that is expected of every center that offers ECD pre-grade art. And in this particular regard, the department, we have had discussions with the Department of Social Development to determine the best mechanism of ensuring that we could have developed a clear program, because currently what the National Early Learning and Development Standard document does is just to give you the standards that are required, but it does not necessarily give you clear program for. So it is intended, like the CASA seeking to do, to make sure that every other person who may then be taking care of young children of this age would know what it is that they have to do on a stepwise fashion. So the other letter is also the extent to which we would use the support of the current government program in this context, the extended public work program, for support of ECD practitioners, because as we know, many of them come through this process. But secondly, I should indicate here that when we talk of using ECD practitioners in this particular regard, one of the problems that is currently also facing the system is that because of lack of parity of salary between an ECD practitioner and a formalized and a teacher, there's also then a sense that we tend to lose teachers from the ECD side into school. And I think it's a matter that we beginning to look into more carefully. Can you might ask what then would be the next step? In fact, as colleagues would know and the honourable members would know, that there's actually no overarching policy in the department on ECD. We have spoken about it, but ECD has been spoken to from different aspects, and we are now at a point where we are developing a national policy that will ensure that we will achieve universal access to great art. But similarly, and that policy would look into all of the aspects that relate to curricula, to the deployment of teachers, to the conditions of service of teachers, as well as surface and looking at the nonsense standards for the funding of great art in our school. An important matter that also that the system is looking at, and we have to get finality on that at the moment, is the improvement of qualifications of great art practitioners, as I've just spoken to. And it's a matter that we continuously are engaging with our sister department to find the best mechanism of ensuring that this can be done. Okay, a pressing matter with respect to ECD at the moment is this whole question about improving the conditions of service for practitioners so that they will be in line with their qualifications and proper scenarios. I can indicate here that as I would indicate here that one of the critical issues, other than access and quality issues, and one of the elements of quality would be the qualification of teachers.
Mm-hmm.
It is a matter that the department, together with through our human resource section, we are currently dealing with a view that we may have a standardized norm across all four institutions where, and it's a matter that's receiving attention. And let me indicate, like inclusive education, this has been an area that has not received so much of adequate attention in the department, and I'm not wanting to make excuses for the department, but I'm not coming to say to honorable members that we have done sufficient in terms of what should have been done in this particular area. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thanks a lot for that. And I once again to see you now that not enough attention was paid to the same as with inclusive education. Any questions? I'm going to come your office. Honourable Smile, Honourable Jane, Honourable Shwana, and then Honourable Gina Long. Thank you.
Really not a question, but I think a correction. I think this is expanded public program, not extended. I can't remember when. I'm not a proper one. It's expanded, not extended.
Thank you, Chairperson. Yeah, mine is with regard to the next step, Chairperson. I think we need to add another bullet point, and that is the monitoring and evaluation of the radar. Because that's an important next step that's not been done. And I'm concerned, Chairperson, of what is happening currently in the Great R classes, in the absence of proper and effective monitoring system. You see, we need not just a situation where we are doing something in the Great R that needs to be redone in the formal or the Great R. I mean the grade 1 class, then we have wasted money and we've wasted the time and the future of those things. So we need to do it properly and correctly, and I think a monitoring system is so urgent, like it must be done tomorrow. Thank you, Chair.
Simply to say that the introduction of proper support, financial and otherwise, for Great R is one of the fundamental innovations in our education system, and therefore it has our greatest support. From a learning point of view, the child's brain is most receptive to a range of cognitive qualities, and at that level, you get it right at that level. It simply becomes a cumulative process in terms of how the brain functions in the course of time. If you get it wrong, then it takes a long time to undo things. So just to say that it is fundamentally important, I think, to get right. Since we have a provincial system of education, I am confident that it will be implemented in a proper way in some provinces. I'm not going to play politics here, but in some provinces among others. And there are very weak provinces when it comes to actual implementation. So we have to be very alert to that, because it's our weakest provinces in terms of administration that have the greatest need. And I can just mention the Eastern Cape is one, and Limpopo is another, and so on. And so, but we must make sure that the nation's children in every single province get the due attention required to get this right. Often with educational innovations, you have one chance to do it properly. So let's support the department in doing this properly by both voicing it, as I'm doing now, but actually monitoring it from a parliamentary point of view. Thank
you.
defense department asking for the document part of it. And this was our place. We recommend, they were so big that we have this. But you see, if you include the past plan in new and in the new, you are talking of the new infrastructure plan and upgraded one. But it's in all the two, because it's like before in the previous document, we talked about the importance of it. And I'm sure we emphasize it from the members. That is very important for the community to develop. And I'm being treated now by the honorable. But I'm checking, is every school in South Africa included in the, if you talk of the you are talking about infrastructure that are going to upgrade into the new. But those who are weak, the ones that we are not going to upgrade again, what can we say to them? Can we have the assurance that every school will be favored with this particular program? Thank you. It will include those in the form for education. That's it.
Sir, I know the policy director is for some reason, but I know equally that there are challenges with regard to the language policy that we have. I think generally we're saying it from another medium of information. But we also have got talent. I think it's a considerable amount that would benefit. They would prefer that they are kids be instructed in English right from that level. So that you don't have a challenge of introducing them to English when the health is being transformed. Because it becomes a new machine in that area as well. That kind of challenge. And to what extent are we facing a major challenge? Because we don't need a situation where you insist on mother tongue and then doing it. I'm not saying it's wrong. I'm saying if we insist on that, when entrance comes, we won't be defiant at that. But generally, people are not, the policy is not responding well to the needs of parents. Is it good for us to insist on it and let parents take their kids away from public schools because of that? Or we should somewhat be able to meet them halfway and be in agreement with what they need on the ground to do?
I just want to know the relationship, how strong it is between the Department of Education and the Department of Social Development. Mm-hmm. We are talking here of the increase in access to 0 to 4 years and wanting to have the training in some sustainability. As the Department of Education, do we have a say in what has been done in that level, 0 to 4? And what is the relationship? We are interested to know when these children get into 5 years, where the Department of Education is in charge, what is the relationship, how far is this department, these two departments, going to. Secondly, I think really we need to commend the department because we want to see it and every time I'm still having this great outcome that. Yes, let us say it's an end of school, we end up having the great art class. But maybe as a committee again, because I think we need to change the mode. In one way or the other, we need to see great art things about that. We are talking about grade 1 to grade 9. in the near future, really, I think we need to address that, that to say grade art must be part of the compulsory classroom education. So we make sure really that we don't keep on talking about the grade art. If it's not compulsory, there's nothing we should compel a parent to get to their children to that class. And maybe we may end up not getting exactly what we want to do. But again, I want to talk on the infrastructure that Honorable Michelle has talked about. Yes, when you look at the plans of expansion of basic education, they were talking of a lot of upgrades to the formerly disadvantaged areas, like SMT, Westwood, Maxwood, get a high number of them. If here you are still planning to do this, are we saying, can you get an assurance to say, since you say we need to improve grade R and all the plans and the new developments that are going to be taking place, can you assure us that to say, yes, we have talked about this, in the new schools that we are going to see, the number of schools in the incentive along the run that say that N is not the number of beds, are we going to need to see these grade R structures being included in the plan, or are we just still planning to do it? Because we want to have something that we can hold you
accountable
on, and you know
exactly what
is going to be. Thank you. Can I ask? Hello, Mr. Thank you very much. We've taken note of the comments. Some of them are comments, like on our plan, rightfully and correctly point to the monitoring and evaluation system, and I think it's a matter that we will take cognizance of, very, very important. The whole question from Honorable James, and I think it's important that we would have to continuously monitor implementation of these policies by each of these provinces and ensure that we can provide, I think national, the Department of Basic Education needs to provide leadership in each of these areas where there could be weaknesses. Honorable Mushwana and Honorable Gina's last statement speak to the whole question of infrastructure. As it is, and I think it is also linked to this, the response to this question is also linked to the statement that Honorable Gina makes about making grade R compulsory. Currently it's not compulsory. And therefore, in your plan, as you roll out, it would be in those areas where it might be found that in terms of infrastructure, you have to provide it in areas where such infrastructure may be developed. However, although I cannot necessarily give you the financial figures, I can indicate that in terms of the plan that the department has put to regarding infrastructure development and upgrade, is that we have had to make sure from the learning process that infrastructure people can't just go themselves without understanding what are the curriculum requirements. And we have had to make sure that we provide for that input both from not only about grade R, but equally about schools that seek to offer subjects. For example, if we are going to offer a science, a physical science, clearly that school, when it's built, must provide for a science lesson. There are schools that have continued, for example, to offer hospitality studies or whatever, and yet they did not have the necessary requirements. Schools that have continued to offer. So I'm just giving an indication, Chairperson, of how some of the infrastructure that we have has also not been able to provide support. So it is in that context that the planning from an infrastructural point of view seeks to take those methods into account. Which then goes to the same question that Honorable Mushwana was asking, does it mean that all schools are included? And I think what we are saying in the presentation is that we are wanting to universalize grade R so that every other child that who may need to get to grade R have had an opportunity. And that's why we're talking about that universal grade R by 2014. Honorable Makubela raises a very difficult matter. And I saw it was also written about in the New Age about last week's Thursday on Mother Tongue and the interpretation of mother tongue and what we understand about mother tongue. I think the language policy, as Honorable Makumela indicated, is very clear. But the biggest question here is how we find alignment, also linking back to what Honorable Boydana was saying about how we speak in South Africa. You see, we would need to also get to understand our definition of mother tongue versus the home language. Because in curriculum speak and in educational terms, we take it, we put language at different levels, at the home language level, at the first additional language level, and the second additional language level. With home language equated to a language level that would be spoken by persons or people that would consider themselves as speaking that mother tongue, as an example. But it's a complicated matter, Chairperson, and I would want to raise it in this different way. For example, because some people were saying that it's very easy we would know what mother tongue is. And I said, no, but you see, I can be, and I would want Honorable Bontana to tell me, I can be, my mother may be a Motswana, and I know it, and my father may be a Zulu speaking, and when I get home, what would be my language? What would be considered as my mother tongue? My mother's tongue, and it is the definition. It's all of those different things that we have not sufficiently debated, because I said if you have a father who's Zulu speaking, a mother who's Setswana speaking, and we have taken, and I know how we've taken it traditionally, because the father is the head of the family, and therefore you become, that's how we take it. But in other practical terms, it also runs and complicates, because when people say, and that, in fact, that's how data is collected and computers are used, because when people then use and say, no, my mother is African, and that they then consider that as African, and yet at home they speak English. And I think it's that debate that we need to do and try to resolve. And it's not an easy one, Chairperson, as you recall, and realize that it's a matter that we currently engage with. As well. Although Gino also asked about the DBT-DSD relationship. Although what happens is we have no choice but to work together. You see, the delivery agreement of the minister, the success of that delivery agreement rests on that. And because of the outcome-focused approach of our government approach, it will be difficult for the two not to work together. In fact, I don't want to say we have had we have bilaterals at the level of officials, and in fact yesterday Director General came to me on his way out when we met, and he said, look, we must organize a bilateral with the Department of Social Development, but it was also into the Department of Health as well as the Department of Cooperative Governance. But it was more about, because remember, as part of the outcome planning approach, we also need to have a partner through the technical implementation forum, all of these departments participating, and therefore making a contribution. And it's in that context that we also engage in them, not only at the bilateral level, but also in terms of through the technical implementation forum as is required by the planning framework of the department. The last thing that I can indicate, Roger, is that what is the progress, because Honorable Gino was asking about what we know about what is happening between 0 to 4 years. I think it is a sector that still needs to be regulated, and we need to get more. I think that because that in our interaction with the Department of Social Development, that's an area where they started to register the signs. But what also becomes important is that the same issue that we spoke about in respect of quality is what still remains and needs to be strengthened. Area that we will be looking at more carefully. I'm aware that equally that there has been an attempt also to evaluate the national integrated ECD plan that has been put forward. So there is a framework attempt to evaluate the impact of that plan, whether there has been progress with respect to the integrated ECD plan that has been adopted by government in the
thanks a lot for that. And I think you are correct when it comes to social development, the relationship has to be strengthened. And there should be a meeting, you know, with the social development committee and our committee just to discuss this law before. Because I believe the minister launched a program according to social development committee where they speak to the north for 4 years. Because like you say that when it comes to law support, if they are not when it comes to that foundation, if we don't work properly on that foundation, it will affect our foundation within the school itself. And I'd like to thank you for this report. I'm sure we'll see you the end of the month, we'll go to it. And to me, although like you said, it's not as comprehensive as the CAT, but personal things definitely, when a person gets a number, etc., you know, to a table, that work is being done. I'd like to thank you. We're closing the meeting now, but I'd like the committee to remain, because we've got 30 minutes to adopt, so. And I'd like to, I'd like to thank the department. And I think you really did the work quite well today, because there were problems last week. But today you really showed us, you know, if it is even ECD, if the ECD person is not here today. And then when it comes to our visitors, I think you have to come more often to the meeting. Because it's quite a number of things that we are doing. And so it's an open invitation. The only people that get almost every week is equal education. And I'd like to thank the officials from Carly that gave me this meeting. I'm closing the meeting and then just move outside. If you want to speak to us, you can write outside and we'll be out. Thank you. The next minute is the 7th of June. Now the 5th of May. Then it's the 7th of June. Those are the minutes to be in action. We won't be long, people. Let's look at page 1 of the 12th of April 2011. There we consider the committee report on Bible 15 of education. And then the outstanding draft minutes of the 22nd, 29th, the 30th, and the 31st of March. If you look at the front page, the first page, is everything in order there? Who are present? And which apologies were received? Okay? Yes, 12th of April. Is that in order?
Yes,
that's in order. All right, so we only have the opening and welcoming. Let's look at page. There we have consideration of the draft committee report on budget of 15.
Okay.
Quality and access to education.
Okay.
Can I stand?
Yes,
please. Someone please. Is live. No, come on. I want to hear it. Alright, look at page 3. Is that in order? Alright, who passes the minute? And who's taken it? Finally, to move and take it up. Thank you. Let's look at the 21st of May, page 1. I've made sure that Konshana was in this meeting. Now, the other thing is that she has no apology for you or anything. Alright, so we have to check into that one. Fine. Page 2, is that in order?
Yes.
Alright. Page 3, the questions and responses.
Yes.
Page 4, yes. And page 5, who moves and seconds? Who moves? Thank you. Alright, ticket. Let's look at the 7th of June. It's the day I was at, where's my apology? Oh, my apology is there. Tina. Page 2 is the static audit. Page 3, we look at planning, quality assessment, monitoring, evaluation, social mobilization, financial. Page 4, responses from the department. Page 5, fine, the reports we have received. We are still waiting on those reports from the department, but we will go through the reports, you know, at the end of the month when we meet the department themselves. Who moves? Who seconds? Fine. At that point, we were absent. I think that was our all minutes. I'd like to thank the committee members, you know, because they really attend this meeting very well. Where we take at our first act, or where we take at our first month. I'd like to thank you. You know, for the interest that you show, and even when you ask questions. Because I think people made very valuable contributions today to all three of the presentations that we received. And I'd like to thank you for that, even if we received the presentations only this morning. And I think next time we should not allow the officials to make examples, especially when it comes to the kingdom. Because straight away they say the whole land they should be people. But I think when it comes to mother tongue, we should have a very good debate within the committee as well. What do you say, Shwana? I know you are. Yes, we need to have a debate. Honest. So that we don't go according to the head of the house or according to the traditional definition. And all the work out the way it should be. Thanks a lot, members.
Thank you very much.